On this episode of the IT AV Show, who owns the security of the AV devices on the network, best practices to secure those devices, and what voice platforms does the AV industry need to worry about? All that and more, next on the IT AV Show.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is ITAV, episode 25, recorded Wednesday, December 19th, 2018. Voice platform.
Support for AV Nation is brought to you by Kramer, AV Beyond the Box.
This is the ITAV Show, the monthly look at how the IT and the AV ecosystems and industries kind of work together. My name is Tim Albright. I am your host. With us to discuss the news that we have gathered for this week, first and foremost, his name is Derek Junkus, and he is from Extron. Welcome, sir.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me again.
Absolutely. Thank you. Also with us from HGA, a new guy from HGA, but HGA nonetheless, Jack Coy. Welcome, sir.
Thanks for having me, Tim. Glad to be here.
So let's kick this kind of story off. The first story we have, though, is about voice control. And it comes to us from our friends over at Spiceworks. And if you're not familiar with Spiceworks and you're in the AV industry, you need to, because in my humble opinion, you need to get more familiar with IT. And Spiceworks is a great resource and a great community for IT managers, for IT professionals. They don't pay me to say that. They're not a sponsor or anything. It's a really good community. And the article that I'm using from this is talking about other voice applications being inside Windows 10 coming up. Windows 10 obviously has Cortana. They're starting to work with Amazon Alexa, but they're also adding some other kind of voice functions in here. Derek, I want to start with you on this. When it comes to voice control and voice platforms, I guess, and this may be the first time I've ever used that phrase, voice platform, but I think it's accurate. Which ones do the AV industry as well as the IT industry need to worry about?
Well, I think just like anything else.
All of them?
We can never just worry about one thing. It wouldn't be the AV business, right? Now, on a more serious note, I think I was at Microsoft Ignite this year, and I did see some of this being mentioned in some of the discussions and some of the more social activities during the event. And I think the, as it relates to the AV business, there's a Windows machine a lot of times, whether it's a Nook or something else, that's present in just about every conference room or under most people's arms. It's still the predominant operating system from a get-or-done business perspective. And so I think what people should know in our industry, in the IT world, is that, there's a lot of Windows 10 out there. It had a very high rate of absorption. And as a result, you have a lot of these services that are built right into the Windows 10 platform. And that's an advantage, I think, that the Windows and Microsoft team have over the more service-oriented offerings from Amazon and Google and others, actually. So I think they have an advantage there, and we need to be wise to that in our industry. I think the role of the PC, the dedicated PC or Nook in the room, that compute power in the room, is going to continue to increase in the near future.
Well, in addition to that, the computing power of the built-in computers into displays as well, right?
Absolutely,
as huddle space become more and more, and those primarily run on Windows operating systems. I say primarily, there are some that run on Linux.
Correct.
I've not yet seen one run on a Mac OS. It could be, I've not seen one in the wild, so they may be developing it, I don't know. Jack, same kind of question to you. As you're designing these systems and helping your clients roll these out, what are you talking to them about when it comes to voice, and which ones do you guys think that the industry needs to worry about?
Yeah, so voice assistants in general are kind of an interesting topic because they're great in the home. They're great for smart home applications, and people are getting used to them and starting to expect them in other locations. That being said, I kind of have mixed feelings on how applicable they are to an AV type setup. I know that some of the manufacturers are really pushing that, or at least the ability to integrate into that, which I think is great because in AV, we need to be able to cater to a wide variety of clients, and a lot of them have different expectations and requirements. That being said, I kind of question in general what the appropriate use case is for it. If there's a good use case, I think it has potential, but there's a lot of concerns around that. Particularly in AV, if we're looking at voice control, we're now looking at standardizing potentially on a voice assistant, which could vary based on the client in terms of are they a Google house, are they Microsoft, are they, what are they, in which direction do they want to go? And then in addition to that, it's more logistically, when you're using voice in an AV environment, how do you standardize those phrases? How do you train properly so that people know the correct phrases to say? Or a better solution is how do you train the artificial intelligence to recognize a wide variety of ranges to get the appropriate task completed? And I think that's kind of a hurdle that we're still struggling with in developing these skills for voice assistants to make them, right now we're training the users and really we want to be training the artificial intelligence in those systems.
That actually brings up a really good point, and this is, could be to either of you. Is there one over the other that you guys have found that has that advantage, the advantage that Jack talked about of the AI itself learning more than training the end users? The AI is learning exactly how people speak.
I don't know if I have enough experience with each of them individually to be able to say one is more advanced than the other. I do know that Amazon Alexa is targeting more of the AV industry, it seems like, or at least business, with their Alexa for Business setup, where they're kind of targeting conference room applications as well as desks. So I know they're actively exploring that. I don't know if they're necessarily light years ahead in terms of learning those different phrases or not. But I know they're targeting that industry.
And I was just going to add that, you know, getting these utterances nailed down and understanding the intent of the user when you use voice commands, and the voice commands are the, you know, the spoken equivalent of a gesture, you know, and we don't even have gestures well-defined in our industry. No. You don't even know what screen you can touch. You're not even sure which one you can interact with in a system. You know, is it something just to look at something on, or is it something I'm supposed to interact with and touch? So, you know, as you know, in terms of integrating in our business, I do think that there are challenges overcoming that. The AI aspect to me still is just raw programming. There's someone that's going to write code that understands the utterance, that understands the intent, and then something else happens as a result. And I think we've been working a lot with Amazon and the Alexa for Business team. We're working on some products with them, but now, there are steep challenges, and I would just say that it's early days for all of these things. Right now, it's a convenient item to have when it's needed, but I would say that there aren't many standards yet, and there's probably a lot of development to come in this area before it becomes something that's ubiquitous and everyone can use.
Yeah, I read an article the other day, I think it was in Wired, talking about the increase in technology and the advancements of it. And you're not wrong, Derek, where it's still some of the early days. The problem I think sometimes happens is folks of a certain age, and I would put myself in that age range, where, you know, we kind of witnessed and we watched how long it took HD video to come out, right? And it was, I mean, we're technically, you know, they developed it in the 1970s, if you want to go way back, but actual honest to goodness, you know, application of it was the mid 90s. And it was, you know, first it was 720 and this, that, and the other, and then you got into 1080 and 1080i and 1080p and the differences in that, and now we've, you know, you have a basic standard of 1080. And then now they're ramping up to 4K. Well, that took, good Lord, 15, 20 years. I don't think it's going to be 15 to 20 years for voice. I really don't. I think it's going to be faster than any of us are comfortable with, at least in the business aspect. It really is kind of ramping up in home. But I think in business, it may take some of us by surprise about how quickly it develops because of the AI and because of the machine learning. It's computers writing computer code for that specific application. But
I would agree. The technology is definitely getting better and better every day. I think the bigger challenges are not necessarily with the technology. It's the privacy. It's the use case. Things around those topics in general. are kind of where I think the adoption, we need to get over some of those hurdles before the adoption starts to increase as well.
And that's a good point. The privacy is actually a very nice segue into our next story. It comes to us from Naked Security. This is an interesting article that I kind of wanted to start the year off with it. The worst passwords of 2018. This article is by Lisa Voss. And Lisa kind of lays out the worst passwords according to Splash Data's annual worst password list. The worst password on the list is still apparently 123456. Number two is password. And they go down the list and this, that, and the other. You know, you've got, you know, password 123 and other variations of that. Jack, I'm going to start with you on this. How do we secure the AV networks, the IT networks? How do we roll out good best practices when it comes to the security of a system, the security of a control system, the security of the network? AV is moving more and more onto the network, and there are certain installations and certain applications where the client needs that information not to be compromised, not to be intercepted, not to be hacked, and this, that, and the other. What is the best practice then is of rolling out both internally to an integrator or to a design consultant and then passing that on to the client?
Yeah, I think it starts by looking at kind of responsible AV IT design, limiting what elements or what AV components are going on a network to what's really required for the functionality you're looking for. With the understanding that, you know, it seems like everything is moving towards IT or IP-based product, eventually we may end up with, you know, pretty much everything on the network, and that's fine. We just need to look at, then we're moving away from deciding what goes on the network to really making sure that we have security nailed all the way down to the smallest component. So for today, though, it makes sense maybe to not put every element on the element or filter things through something like, you know, an Extron control processor that has an AV LAN on it. Maybe make that one point of connection to the rest of the world so you can kind of manage one device that has more eyes on it than relying on the security of a bunch of individual products. On top of that, then, is you're looking at kind of security practices and password management. A lot of that, we point in some industry standards, but a lot of times we're relying, as a consultant, we're relying on the manufacturers and the integrators to be able to implement that. And there's only so much that we can do or say, especially from a liability perspective. So a lot of times we're pushing the manufacturers to help develop their security standards. And part of that is something that we've kind of been looking at from the security industry, where they've had issues with security cameras being hacked and using that as a gateway to IT networks, and looking at what we're doing in those industries of making it so, yeah, you need a password, but these devices come out of the box when you first configure them. They're required to change the password from the default. The manufacturer firmware will not let them proceed on to deploying the product until they change that password. So looking at things like that and smarter password management from the manufacturer standpoint is something that we're always interested in.
All right, Derek, you're the manufacturer. You're a manufacturer. What can you guys do? I mean, seriously, what can you guys do? Because once that box leaves your shipping warehouse, you're putting it in the hands of an integrator. There are certain things that you guys can do. Certainly there are standards. There are things that you can ask your integrators and your dealers to do, but once it leaves, it's kind of out of your hands. So what can you guys do kind of internally to make sure that your dealers know and that even, you know, their clients know, some best practices?
Yeah, I think, some of the things that we've done is we haven't given the dealers or the industry a choice. We have tended towards encrypting all communications between our control system ecosystem devices. So all things are encrypted. And the rate of encryption is very high, and it's to the highest standards we can migrate our firmware to each time that we do a iteration of product. The challenge as a manufacturer, though, is not every product was designed in an age or an era where security was treated the same way as any other technology. So whether it was audio or video or control, security is right up there, at least for Extron, is being one of those components that make up a product nowadays. And so one of the things that we've done at Extron is we have changed the way we think about that over the last 3 years. And we have a group, and we have a really a center of excellence where what we do is we focus on those aspects of security. And we think of everything from supply chain to deployment. So, and the way that you really, I think, will do our best in our industry is to offer a suite of products, the right kind of training, but also the right type of information and implementation details that people need out there in order to be able to deploy the products. Because sometimes you're very fortunate to get the engineers, the designers, or consultants in and be able to get them trained on, you know, the technology. But there's a whole other group of people that need to be educated about how they get applied. So in general, by default, we opt to be very secure. That means that changes our accessibility envelope a little bit. But what it does is make sure that there's a guaranteed level of performance between most of our products. From there, we're incrementing certain features to allow some options in the future. But sometimes laws and regulations actually come into effect. California has a new law that's coming into effect for all new products that are manufactured very soon, are going to need a way to force the user to change the default password in the product. And so that's going to impact us in the whole industry if you want to be able to ship products essentially in this country, because whatever rule applies there, most manufacturers are going to have to comply with globally.
Real quickly about that law, that if it's manufactured in California or if it's shipped and installed to
shipped California. And installed, yeah, but us, we're a California manufacturer, so we're looking at this as a company-wide mandate for what we're going to do, because we're not just going to make one set of products for one place.
Oh, Lord, no. But then that's why I wanted to clarify that, because if obviously California is an incredibly populous state for those outside of the U.S., it's one of the more populous states. So any manufacturer that does business in the U.S. is eventually going to ship things to California, most likely.
And I just had a quick question for Jack. Jack, when you're specifying projects nowadays and working with your clients and sort of advocating for them in terms of technology and whatnot, are you able to help them to define some parameters by which they can look to the future so that they understand the expectations for deploying products like this with security things in mind? Or How is that impacting you guys?
Yeah, definitely. We try to have an upfront conversation with the owner regarding any sort of networked product and make sure they understand the implications of that. At this point, a lot of those products are going on their internal IT network, so they're very invested in it and they want to know what's going on. So they're oftentimes even proactive about it, wanting to know how that's going to impact them. Some clients will run that through their processes to check for compliance with their processes. We definitely have those conversations up front. We have security language integrated into our specifications at this point. And it's a matter of making sure that that's getting enforced and implemented in the field. And I was going to say, one of the other things here that I'm looking at is if we have these standalone, you know, AV networks, a lot of times they're kind of, you know, installed and set to the side and ignored, making sure those are kept up to date. And like I said, a lot of them are moving more onto the customer's IT network. But they're still kind of a standalone device that they're not necessarily paying a lot of attention to. So I think anything that we can do to move the industry towards adopting more integration to IT centric management and deployment software packages, so they're able to see these products alongside all of their other devices and manage them the same way, I think that'll really help, because then they can treat it just as another endpoint. Sure. And they're aware of what's going on at the very least and can make sure that they're on top of it. So I've started to see some direction that way in some of the major manufacturers, and I think if we continue moving that way, I'm making sure that all these items are always on the radar of the IT department if there is a IT department involved.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, guys, kind of wrapping up here. Our last story here comes to us from Commercial Integrator. And Brad McMullen writing about the security, I'll say this is kind of the theme today, of the IP devices. And I want to read a quote here. He writes, however, with all these devices connected to a business's network, a significant question arises that companies must address. Who owns IP security devices connected to a company's network? So, Jack, we'll start with you. You're probably the closest one of the three of us directly to a client. Who's responsible? Who's the one that takes the biggest ownership of these devices?
Yeah, I mean, it really comes down to the end user and the client's IT department's capabilities. If they have a robust IT department that's managing a large network already, kind of folding this into their practice kind of makes sense. It's kind of just another endpoint to them at that point, and something that they need to be aware of as it's on their network. When we're talking about clients that may not have that savvy IT department or may not have an IT department at all, I think it's a great opportunity for manufacturers or integrators to have managed services to make sure that the customers' products are kept up to date, secured, and look out for their best interests. So it's kind of a multi-step to that, depending on the type of client, I guess.
Is it something where, and you mentioned managed services, which, you know, if you paid attention to the industry, you know, every magazine and a lot of panel discussions have been made about that, and you know, RMRs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Is there a case to be made, though, where it depends, where if you walk into IBM, right, and you're doing a system for IBM, do they need managed services, or is their IT department not sufficient enough to say, you know what, we got this, guys, right? Does it depend on the client, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely depends on the client. Even if we're talking about a large corporation like IBM, I would assume that they probably have an IT department capable of taking it on and has those resources to manage it efficiently or effectively. But it may be something that they don't want to deal with too. So depends on their vantage point on it. So maybe they still could be a candidate for a managed service type plan. It just really comes down to the end user and how their organization is set up and what they want to support.
Yeah, and I was going to say also that it also depends how they want to manage cost and expense, right? So that's another way that you can defray or be able to acknowledge certain business-related expenses, and that may be a strategy for some companies to be able to defray some of that. And maybe they have a policy of basically doing the same type of approach with managed services with other services outside of AV. So if you have that mindset already, that's one way to defray liability, to minimize and shed responsibility necessarily for not just security of devices, but just, you know, whatever's sitting on the network. It could be AV services related. It may not be. Maybe printers or other things, right? In this connected world now, it's hard to be a master of all product, right? How can you possibly basically do that? I mean, think about our AV world, right? I mean, in Jack's world, he's worried about everything from the plumbing that the AV infrastructure goes through, you know, 2 years before a building is even standing up. And somehow Jack needs to figure out, you know, what goes inside that plumbing. At the same time, he needs to define for the integrator who may be awarded a project related to the work that he's doing for his client. He needs to be able to specify how something's going to be implemented. You know, and those are two very separate things, right? They're months or years apart. And this question of liability, I think, is going to come up even more because, without a doubt, like we've talked about, lots of devices are going on networks. Some have good passwords, some don't. They're all deployed by people. And, you know, just look at all of us, you know, where the three of us are probably pretty savvy, right? We're probably trying not to reuse passwords, but I can't remember them all. I need to use a service now just to manage passwords. Now imagine putting 1,000 devices on an AV network or on a client's network. I mean, that's another level and league above what, you know, we have to do on a personal level. But for some customers, they may want to defray that or just shed that liability so it's not their direct responsibility. But I would say that the people who make the best decisions are the folks that have to live with the technology, because long after the manufacturer has shipped the product and someone has integrated and designed something for it and then deployed it, there's a customer standing there that's got to make it stand up every day and do what it's supposed to do. I think those folks ultimately, whether they like it or not, are the ones that have to bear the burden most of the time for making sure those systems are up, they're working well, and ultimately secure if that's the case.
Yeah, and Derek's right. Those are the folks who probably make the best decisions because they're the ones living with it every day, you know. All right, guys, that's going to do it for this month. Thank you both so much. Mr. Derek Jonkis, how do people find you and or Extron?
You can email me at djonkis@extron.com, allthese@extron.com for whatever you need in AV. And Tim, thanks for having me on the show again. That was a real pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir. Also, Jack Coy. Jack is from HGA. So thank you, sir. How do people find you?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Yeah, if you want to get a hold of me, look me up on LinkedIn or HGA on LinkedIn or Twitter, or you can check out our website, hga.com.
Very good. My name is Tim Albright. Don't follow me on the Twitters, but go by the website if you would, please, avnation.tv. Avnation.tv, you'll find this program and a host of others. While you're there, check out our supporters section. These are the folks who help us financially, help us bring you ITAV and AV Week and Resi Week and ISC in a few weeks. Also, while you're there, Extron is one of those. We thank them for their support. Also, while you're there, check out our next webinar. It's actually on network security. It happens in a couple weeks. So check all that out and more at avnation.tv, avnation.tv. Thanks so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching. That's all the time we have for IT AV.